Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is Tell Me Everything, the little show that could. I'm John Fugelsang. So glad to be with you here on the Love Fest, bringing good trouble to the right wing bubble. Chris Hauselt, our executive producer, somewhere in the deep south. Thea Harper is producing this show from behind a pane of glass here in the Howard Stern Tower, 309 floors high above Gotham. And it's very empty, although we will have a guest tonight. Thea, we're going to actually bring people in for a Monday. Ken Block will be back. He is the author of Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, The Data That Shows Why He Lost, and How We Can Improve Our Elections. We had Mr. Block on a few months ago in January, and he talked about how the Trump campaign came to him in November of 2020 and said, hey, help us prove that it was rigged. And so he worked on it, and he found out it was not. His book is coming out. We're very pleased to welcome him back. Also, comedian Rhonda Hanson will be here. And your calls on everything from Donald Trump's settlements to Joe Biden's budget. It's been a very busy day of news, my friends. Former Trump White House aide Peter Navarro has been ordered to report to a Miami prison on March 19th to begin serving a 4-month sentence for defying a congressional subpoena. Finally, someone is in trouble for blowing one of those off. And maybe if things go right, he can have Steve Bannon as a cellmate. Donald Trump added his New York hush money trial to the list of legal proceedings he wants delayed until the Supreme Court rules on his legal immunity status. In the White House, Housing and Urban Development Secretary Marcia Fudge announced she is stepping down from the cabinet post ahead of the election season. She's one of the few cabinet members in this administration who has left in the first term. Pope Francis must have heard I was saying too many good things about him and praising him too much. And so he has now begged for negotiations and an end to the war between Russia and Ukraine, asking Ukraine to find the courage of the white flag. Pope, I love you. But when you're wrong, holy crap. Oh, boy. We need peace. So please, Poland, let Hitler mow his tanks through. And we had some sad news. A good friend of this show, Malachi McCourt, the legendary actor and bartender and author, has left us at the age of 92. He was a guest on this show many times. We'll be talking about him later on in the show. And as you might not know from our corporate news, Haiti is on the verge of collapse as we speak. The country's under a state of emergency as the country's gangs have freed thousands of people from prisons and are reportedly uniting to bring down the unelected Prime Minister Ariel Henry. Now, the fighting is raging in Henry between security forces and paramilitary forces. And even Wyclef Jean has joined the calls for the prime minister to leave office. The interior ministry is on fire. There have been attacks on the international airport. There have been gunfights outside the presidential palace. The U.S. military has evacuated non-essential personnel from the embassy in Haiti, which is a sign of the deteriorating situation there. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if we will see an international mission to help. It certainly seems like one of those occasions when that would be called for, but in an election year, would it happen? And would the people of Haiti still want it at this point? We'll be following this story in the weeks to come. It is terrible. It is my fervent hope that the corporate media follows the Haiti story as well. And we got a good show planned. You guys are invited to join us at 866-997-4748. Here's what I want to do for this one. I want to just share a few things Donald Trump said over the weekend. Yeah, I begin every show with one of these rants, but this one, all I want to do is just stuff from the last 72 hours that our MAGA friends and Republican politicians get to defend. But first, did you hear Joe Biden released a budget proposal or a campaign document, whichever one you want to believe? But it certainly was a budget proposal that showed what this administration's values are. Tax breaks for families, lower health care costs, smaller deficits, higher taxes on wealthy people, higher taxes on wealthy corporations. It has no chance of passing the House and Senate, but it's an election year blueprint about what Biden would do if he got enough Democrats in the House for a second term. And if this Biden budget became law, deficits would be pruned $3 trillion over a decade, would raise tax revenues by almost $5 trillion over that period, and use almost $2 trillion to fund various programs, with the rest going to deficit reduction. Here he is today, speaking at the National League of Cities Conference, where the president heavily referenced his State of the Union address in describing the optimism he feels for our American economy.
The State of the Union is strong and getting stronger. That's what I see. As I travel the country, folks often tell me how back in 2020 they were down. They'd lost their business. They'd lost their faith in the system. And then the laws we passed, the work we've done together, got them back on their feet, creating new jobs, new businesses, a new cycle of hope. We've got a long way to go in terms of, and by the way, public confidence in the economy is coming back. So when you see shovels in the ground, people going to work, I hope you feel what we do, and you feel it with a sense of pride. Pride in your hometown. Pride in making a comeback. Pride in America. Pride in knowing we can get big things done when we work together.
Yeah, okay, but he's old, so maybe I want a fascist. See, he said in the State of the Union that Medicare should have the ability to negotiate prices on 500 prescription drugs, which could save $200 billion over 10 years. So today, in Manchester, New Hampshire, he called on Congress to apply his $2,000 cap on drug costs and $35 on insulin for everybody, not just the people who have Medicare. That proposal would provide about $900 billion in defense as well for the next fiscal year, which is about $16 billion more than the baseline. And the budget includes $258 billion to help or preserve 2 million homes, helping address housing shortage, which is why housing prices are high. Parents making under 200 grand annually would have access to child care. Most eligible families would pay no more than $10 a day. Please run on this, Democrats. Make a lot of noise about this so non-millionaires who vote will hear you, because the media won't be covering it. I mean, I thought the Oscars were great as well, but that's all we heard about all day. Meanwhile, let's get to Donald Trump's last 72 hours, because I wanted to give you Biden as a contrast. Today on CNBC, where I used to work with Joe Kernan, Trump was on with Joe, and he indicated he'd be willing to reduce spending for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, although, as per the usual, he didn't offer any kind of full policy. Give a quick listen to Donald Trump agreeing about cutting entitlements.
You changed your outlook on how to handle entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Mr. President. It seems like it something has to be done, or else we're going to be stuck at 120% of debt to GDP forever.
So first of all, there is a lot you can do in terms of entitlements, in terms of cutting.
So he went on that. The White House today released a video showing all the different times Trump has talked about changing or cutting entitlements. And they call them entitlements, Republicans do, because they don't want to call them earned benefits, which is what they are. This kind of policy plays really well in America's punch ourselves in the face belt. So House Republicans on Thursday had their own budget resolution for the next fiscal year out of committee, saying it would trim deficits by $14 trillion over 10 years. And it's based on Hogwarts stuff and cutting everything and having more poverty everywhere. Let's talk about the weekend. Trump had quite a busy weekend, and every Republican you know should have the chance to defend everything you're about to hear. At a rally in Georgia, this is clip A6, here he is, Mr. Classy himself. He gave his commentary, his rebuttal to Joe Biden's State of the Union address. Well, actually, he didn't. He mocked the president's speech impediment and made fun of people who stutter.
Two nights ago, we all heard Crooked Joe's angry, dark, hate-filled rant of a State of the Union address. Wasn't it? Didn't it bring us together? Remember, he said, I'm going to bring the country together. I'm going to bring it together. No, no. He's a threat to democracy. I will tell you, he's a threat to democracy.
Okay, they say up to 10% of kids struggle at some point with a stutter. Joe Biden has been a mentor to children who stutter, and Trump is laughing at those children because he is a fucking vicious, stupid bully. I mean, it's almost like he's got a thing for mocking people with disabilities. Oh yeah, I forgot, he does. And our Republican friends denied he mocked a reporter's disability on the campaign trail in 2016, even though Trump said, "Have you seen this guy, this poor guy?" before he mocked them. It's a sociopath. And it's good that sociopaths finally have a champion. Rather ironically, though, Donald Trump gave a speech where he had some problems with his own way of speaking, and we'll get to that. Also, did you know he hosted Hungarian dictator Viktor Orban, also known as Vladimir Putin's errand boy, at his Florida retirement home over the weekend, because Donald Trump is an authoritarian wannabe sympathizer. And you guys know Viktor Orban. He's a white supremacist. He wants to ban abortion. He's one of the few European countries rooting for Putin. Here's some of his greatest hits. We do not want to become peoples of mixed race. All the terrorists are basically migrants. We should be able to deal with Islam if we were allowed to deal with it in the way we think we should. Europe and European identity is rooted in Christianity. Hitler loved that one. We would like to preserve Europe for Europeans. There is a clear link between illegal migrants coming to Europe and the spread of terrorism. You can see why MAGA would like a guy like this. Here is Donald Trump at his shitty Florida retirement house praising Viktor Orban.
There's nobody that's better, smarter, or a better leader than Viktor Orban. He's fantastic. He's the, as you know, the Prime Minister of Hungary, and does a great job. He's a non-controversial figure because he said this is the way it's going to be, and that's the end of it, right? He's the boss. And you know, he's a great leader, fantastic leader in Europe and all over the world. They respect him. It's an honor to have you with us, Viktor. Very great honor. Thank you.
Nobody better, smarter, or a better leader. And it's incredible how unified your population can be when you don't allow them to dissent at you. You know, Donald Trump owes about $500 million between his business debts and the lawsuits. And he stole classified intel for years. He stole classified national security documents. We still don't know why. And not all of it has been accounted for. Viktor Orban's got a lot of money. Vladimir Putin's got a lot of money. Viktor Orban's Vladimir Putin's message boy. Viktor Orban would find a lot of value in U.S. intelligence. After meeting with Donald Trump in Florida, Orban told reporters that Trump promised that if he's elected, he would not give Ukraine a penny in military aid. So there you go. If you believe in freedom, democracy, and not letting imperial armies ravage and rape your countryside and murder your children, If you don't like that, maybe consider voting for the old guy. Now, here's another thing Donald Trump did this weekend. You know, he was found liable for sexually assaulting E. Jean Carroll, who's a friend of this show. Judge Lewis Kaplan said what the jury found Trump did was, in fact, rape, as is commonly understood, and she was awarded $5 million in damages. But then Trump defamed her again, and the second jury found him liable for another $83 million in damages. Well, guess what? On Saturday, while speaking at a campaign rally in Georgia, he repeated his claims that she had made up her whole story. Give a quick listen. Here's A7, Trump not being able to keep his mouth shut about E. Jean Carroll despite losing $91 million in civil defamation trials.
Sometimes it's not good to be rich. I just posted a $91 million bond, $91 million, on a fake story, totally made up story. Think of it, $91 million. I could say things about what it would cost normally. $91 million. Based on false accusations made about me by a woman that I knew nothing about, didn't know, never heard of. I know nothing about her. She wrote a book. She said things. And when I denied it, I said, it's so crazy. It's false. I got sued for defamation. That's where it starts.
Wow. Yeah. Let's watch that amount climb higher. By the way, Donald Trump's speech in Rome, Georgia, 2 nights ago. Pretty impressive. He mocked Biden having a stutter. He mocked all people who have a stutter. He said he's friends with Putin, but called him Putin. He said Joe Biden's going after him because he is a political appointment of Biden. I think he meant opponent. He said he's not cognitively declined. And he said the media should be banned from writing bad stories about him. He also promised to defund any public schools that had vaccine mandates of any kind. Meaning he's going to defund every public school or bring back polio. Literally every state requires the polio vaccine. And Donald Trump said he'll stop funding any public schools that have any vaccine mandates, because why not have measles in your kid? It's but Biden's old, right? He said MSNBC shouldn't be allowed to continue because they've said such mean things. You know what? Here's a quick little montage of things Donald Trump has actually said in just his last two rallies.
Ridden nation, we have become a nation like nobody thought.
Use your kitchen, and I'm going to use your bedroom, and there's not a damn thing. And that's the nice ones, okay? That's the nice ones.
The most disgraceful part of Joe Biden's disservice is the divisive and all complements of an incompetent. He must be cognitively impaired. I'm not cognitively. And, you know,
raided my house in Florida, Mar-a-Lago. They raided with no rate. They had no reason to. The attacks on me will be violent. They say that it's violent. The attacks. Biden said it against Joe Biden's top and only political appointment, a guy named
opponent.
Me. You can't mix names, purposely mix names, you know, purposely. Ukraine and Russia wouldn't be fighting. I knew Putin. I know him very well. Putin. He was no women love me. You know, I protect women. I protect Megyn Kelly. May she rest in peace. Again, yes, oh yes,
okay,
and quickly.
You get the idea, right? So, again, they say Biden's old. I give Trump latitude. I say the wrong thing all the time on the air. I botch words. I mangle syllables. But if you're going to be going out there claiming your opponent has dementia and you can't say the word opponent, bring it. Meanwhile, it's official. Congratulations. Lara Trump is the co-chair of the RNC. The RNC will now be paying Donald Trump's legal bills. His campaign has taken over Operation Control of the Republican National Committee as of today. On Friday, former North Carolina GOP chair Michael Whatley was named the new chair, and Trump's daughter-in-law, Lara Trump, a woman so brilliant, she married Eric. She was elected as co-chair. Now, Whatley's replacing Ronna McDaniel, who stepped down after serving more than 7 years in the post and really running the place into the ground. I mean, Michael Steele was the last responsible, efficient RNC chair they had, and they got rid of that brother as soon as they could. Now, if you don't know who Michael Whatley is, he's the guy who's going to get all the blame for the RNC's money troubles after Lara diverts all their money for you-know-who's legal bills. Donald Trump had been allies for a long time with Ronna McDaniel, but of course he felt she wasn't doing enough on voter integrity, meaning lying that it was a stolen election. The RNC had about $8 million, only about one-third as much as the Democratic National Committee. And now Lara has pretty much said they're going to divert funds to paying for his legal bills. And most likely, we'll see how effective it is at laundering substantial donations from overseas sources, right? Now, his newly installed leadership team at the RNC today began the process of pushing out dozens of officials. Politico called it a bloodbath. All told, more than 60 RNC staffers will be let go. And under the new structure, they're going to merge the RNC's operations with the Trump campaign, like communications, data, fundraising for the RNC and the Trump campaign will be one and the same. Friends, the RNC coffers will have a zero balance by Easter Sunday. Oh, and I almost forgot one other thing. Trump's former chief of staff, General John Kelly, went on the record regarding Donald Trump's praise of Adolf Hitler. This just happened today. He said he thought Putin was an okay guy and Kim Jong-un was an okay guy. He said, well, Hitler did some good things. I said, well, what? And he said, well, Hitler rebuilt the economy. But what did he do with that rebuilt economy? He turned it against his own people and against the world. And I said, sir, you can never say anything good about Hitler. Nothing. It's pretty hard to believe he missed the Holocaust. Pretty hard to understand how he missed the 400,000 American GIs killed in the European theater. But I think it's more, again, a tough guy thing.
He would ask about the loyalty issues and about how, when I pointed out to him the German generals as a group were not loyal to Hitler and in fact tried to assassinate him a few times, and he did not know that. So you got all that? Trump's weekend? Just the last 3 days? He mocked the disability, mocked every child who struggled with a stutter, said the media shouldn't be allowed to be critical of him. He hosted and praised another dictator. He promised to defund the American public school system unless they allow infectious diseases to run rampant. His own chief of staff says he's a fan of Hitler. He indicated again he wants to cut Medicare and Social Security, and he set up his daughter-in-law, who has no experience, to run the Republican Party and its fundraising. My friends, if Joe Biden owed half a bill for rape and fraud and had 91 criminal charges and named Hunter's wife the head of the DNC, and if he hosted and hyped up a foreign dictator at his house, and if his wife wasn't coming to his campaign events and he spray tanned his face into a color that has never existed in North America during winter months, the media wouldn't be talking about the Oscars. But we want to know what you think, and we want to know what you think of the Oscars as well. But just remember, these are the choices. You got the guy who stole from vets with a fraud online university, attacks democracy itself, has 91 criminal charges, and has been adjudicated a rapist, and the old guy who stutters. We're at 866-997-4748. We'll be right back with Ken Block in just a moment. This is Progress.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
You know, a lot of folks searched for evidence of voter fraud way, way back in 2020. If you watched Fox News, you got to know a whole bunch of them. And if you're a smart person who watched Fox News, you know that very few of them were unbiased professionals. And only one of the people who searched for evidence of voter fraud has written a book about his experience. And it's a pleasure to welcome Ken Block back. He's an expert in voter data. He's a technology entrepreneur, a two-time candidate for governor, an advocate for good government, and the founder of a centrist political party in his spare time. His work in data analytics uncovered the truth of how elections are conducted, and it was the basis for some legal actions regarding elections. The lead attorney for Trump's campaign said he had complete confidence in Mr. Block's work. He's also been credited with helping Texas save more than $1 billion in food stamp fraud and inefficiencies. He was on a few months ago, and we talked about his upcoming book, Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud in the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost and how we can improve our elections. And it details the work Mr. Block did for Trump's campaign, what he did and didn't find, and the Trump supporters who kept on claiming fraud. It's a really sharp, important look at how our states managed to bring chaos to our federal elections, as he says, and how the broad differences in voting regulations, data quality, and even exemptions from federal election laws create a very messy web of problems that ultimately threaten our democracy. He's had a very busy day on Aaron Burnett and Morning Joe. I'm glad you saved the best for last. Ken Block,
absolutely.
Welcome back.
John, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here in person.
I'd so much rather be in person than on a computer.
Well, it's so lovely having folks here with us. We used to do this all the time, so you're a very special guest. Let me say, I can only imagine how busy this book tour is. In November of 2020, you got a call from the Trump campaign, and they wanted to hire you to find evidence of election fraud. I still find this so fascinating. I'm wondering, how did the campaign first contact your office, and who was it that contacted you?
Yeah, so the lawyer I reported to is the one who called me on my cell phone. I don't know how he got my number. His name was Alex Cannon, and he was one of the top attorneys inside the campaign infrastructure for the Trump campaign. I answered the phone, had no idea what the number was, and didn't know his name when he introduced himself. And he got right to it. This was the day after the election. It was a nice evening in Rhode Island. It was warm. as on the back deck. And my wife and daughter were looking at me as I froze when he told me that he wanted me to help the campaign look for voter fraud. And they were looking at me wondering if I was stroking out or something, right? You know, it was, my mouth was hanging open and I couldn't believe what was happening. I hadn't applied for a job like this. I wasn't pushing my name to do something like this. This was truly from out of the blue. And I told him I'd have to think about it and get back to him, and had the conversation with a close family and some close friends, and decided that it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to do what could be a nationwide audit of a presidential election in real time. And as a data person, I thought this was a really fascinating opportunity for me to do something that hardly anyone would ever get the chance to do, not to mention the fact that money would be no object because they were obviously going to throw however much money I told them I needed to do the job. So I convinced my family to let me do it. I told them the next day I'd do it. And that began, without a doubt, the 30 craziest days of my life.
And again, it's fascinating to me because they were sincere with you. They didn't say, we want you to find the results we want. They presented you as saying, we want you to use all of your expertise and skills and get to the bottom of this and bring an unvarnished, unbiased truth.
Right. I told them before I signed the contract, I said, I want you to understand that in a decade of working with voter data, I've not seen anything close to the findings that I know you're going to need me to find. And I want to make sure everybody understands that I'm not promising you a result. I'm going to tell you what I find, and what I find is what the truth is. And what the answer that came back from Alex was, that's exactly what we want. And that's the mind-blowing part about all of this, is that there were careful attorneys working inside the Trump campaign infrastructure who did their due diligence and had a strong interest in understanding what the truth was when it came to voter fraud.
Except the MyPillow guy was more persuasive, apparently, to some sources.
Anybody who told the president what he wanted to hear was the voice that won out.
It's so fascinating. Now, just for the record, so everyone, we're on the same page, voter impersonation has never swayed the results of any national election in our country's history, correct?
Not that I'm aware of in any way, shape, or form, correct.
What were your initial meetings like?
Well, this was in the COVID fall and winter, so everyone was working remotely. I mean, my meetings were mostly phone calls with Alex.
After the election, before January 6th,
correct.
Is the time.
Yeah, that's the time frame. Alex also did me a huge favor. He told me, once we had signed the contract, that he had decided that the best way to conduct what we were doing was to keep my identity confidential from the White House. He wanted me to be able to do my work without political pressure being exerted on me. And that, in hindsight, was such an important decision on his part. I had complete freedom to do the work I needed to do, and I didn't have anybody leaning on me, pressuring me to find 500 more votes in Georgia or whatever craziness was going to come. None of that stuff happened, which is really remarkable.
I'm glad you say that. I should point out that the Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, writes the introduction to your book.
Correct.
Which is deeply moving to me because I will always give him credit for telling the truth, though it cost him politically. What was your process like? How does one go about carrying out a mission like this?
It was going to be hard enough to fulfill what I had committed to doing in the contract, which was looking for deceased voters across the six swing states, and to also undertake an effort to look for people who voted twice, once in one state, once in another state. And this does happen. Right? In fact, in 2020, I predicted a couple of dead votes that were going to happen before they happened. People do take two bites of the electoral apple. If they're fortunate enough to have homes in two different states and they realize there's not a lot of consequence to doing it, I mean, it happens. It does.
But that's a crime of privilege we're talking
about.
It's
a crime of, absolutely a crime of privilege. And in fact, for both deceased voters and for duplicate votes, in my experience going back years now, it swings roughly 55%, 45% Republicans committing the fraud as opposed to Democrats. So there is no partisan slant as to actual real life voter fraud that can be proven. But to get back to your question, on how do you go about doing it, what was very hard to predict, in fact, what neither Alex nor I anticipated when we did the contract, was the very next day after I signed the contract, he started coming to me with requests for me to evaluate claims of voter fraud that other people had made.
Boom.
And these were nonstop over the course of the 35 days I did work for the campaign. There wasn't a day that went by where I wasn't delivered some claim by somebody somewhere claiming massive voter fraud in some state or across the country.
And this wasn't part of the initial pitch to
no,
you.
No, it was not.
They said, we want you to do the investigation. Oh, but by the way, can you tell us if any of these are true?
Well, a lot of debunking some of these claims that were brought to me involved performing data analytics that cost money, because especially I have to go out sometimes and use vendors to do some particularly confidential work. So when they started coming to me asking me to do work where I had to use outside vendors, I had to charge them more money. This was just sort of the way we worked. And I know we talked about this last time, but President Trump has a reputation sometimes for treating his vendors harshly and not paying invoices sometimes.
Wait, I've never heard this. You're saying sometimes when he contracts people for services, he doesn't pay them the money promised?
That's what the rumor is.
I write this down. I've never heard that in my life.
And so I made sure to make sure that I got paid in advance.
I bet Alex did too.
And he was happy to do that. So, yeah. We were up against it without all the additional work, and with all the additional work, it was nonstop, up all hours doing work and trying to be responsive to the crisis of the minute. And there were lots of crises of the minute.
It's so fascinating to me. I want to dive into some of the more specific instances of alleged voter fraud that our listeners would be familiar with, given the unbelievable amount of attention these alleged incidents got in the media. We know the answer to the overall question of whether voter fraud was rampant, as Trump claimed. We don't know the details. So here's just a few of the greatest hits. Did 740,070 voters in Wisconsin really cast duplicate votes?
No, but that was my favorite claim in that whole episode. And what's so just absolutely bonkers about it is a group of self-described volunteers, in air quotes, had done some data analytics. They didn't know what they were doing or looking at, and had determined incorrectly that 740,000 voters in Wisconsin illegally voted twice. And they were convinced they were right. They wanted the Department of Justice to swoop in and start arresting people by the tanker truckload. And they took their claim to an acquaintance of theirs who played golf. That acquaintance took the claim to the manager of a Trump golf course. The manager of the Trump golf course forwarded the claim to Eric Trump, who forwarded the claim to the Oval Office, who delivered the claim to Alex Cannon, who called me up and said, tell me why this claim is wrong.
And that was your daily ritual, claims like that.
Yeah, well, that this one was at the end. This was the icing on the cake.
7,000 in Wisconsin alone
700,000.
Oh, 7,000 seems far-fetched. 740,000 seems so extreme. Who would make up such a ridiculous
number?
It's worth looking into.
I fully believe that the volunteers believed their finding was true, but they never thought to question if such an outrageous result had a different explanation other than voter fraud. And it did. And that result was they literally didn't understand that the data they were looking at only had mail ballots and it didn't contain the 700,000 votes that Wisconsin voters cast in person.
Wow. Okay. Here's another one. Were dead Pennsylvanians really casting ballots by mail?
Yeah. This was a funeral home director who did his own research and concluded that there were 100 zombie voters. And this is one of the first claims I got. And I was able to, what people don't understand, and I'm going to get just
Please.
Ever so slightly
Please.
Technical with you. In the days after the election, the data that's available is pretty rotten. And the mail ballot data is extremely complicated. You have the name of the person, you have the address of the person, then you have all this other information about request for a mail ballot get sent out? Did a mail ballot request come back? Did an actual mail ballot get sent out? Did the filled out mail ballot come back? Did the signature match? There's all these different steps in the process, and some of these data files have information about those steps, others don't. So the data is a mess across the country.
Right.
In fact, to look at all the mail ballots in the country, you have to look at over 500 different files, all formatted differently. It's a nightmare. And the funeral home director didn't understand the information inside the mail ballot file that he was looking at. And he thought that a whole bunch of people who had died cast a vote, but the mail ballot file didn't say that the vote had actually been cast. It said that that person had either been sent a mail ballot or that a mail ballot application had gone out, but it didn't. There were only just a handful of votes where a vote was actually cast by somebody who was dead. But most of those were voters who cast the vote while they were alive, but then passed away before election day.
Really?
This is my favorite unbelievable factoid about elections that I'm going to drop on you.
My wife's grandmother did that to her father as he was to her husband as he was dying, saying, fill out your ballot before it's too late.
Right. So what most people don't understand is, well, I'm going to ask you the question. Do you think in this situation where you fill out a ballot, you send it in, then you pass away before election day, does the vote count or does the vote not count?
I would think it would count.
Depends on where you live.
Different from state to state?
Different from county to county in some circumstances.
Mercy.
In about a third of the states, that vote counts. In just over a third of the state, the vote doesn't count. And in the other third of the states, there's no law about it whatsoever.
We hear dead people voting, and we have these folkloric images of Sinatra getting the Chicago mob to deliver for Kennedy. But in reality, it's usually this. Someone votes, and then they die. Or do you get a lot of people whose dad just died, and they fill out his ballot anyway because dad would have wanted to vote for this person and mail it in?
I'm sure there's some of that that goes on. But what's interesting is that in Pennsylvania, in 2020, in September, I identified a newly registered voter who had been dead since 2013. And I saw this. This is actually entered in the record in a court case where my data was part of a court case in Pennsylvania. And I predicted that that registration was going to yield a fraudulent vote for this deceased woman who had been registered in September. And it happened. And the vote counted, even though we told Pennsylvania election officials about this particular instance.
Wow.
And after the election, they removed that voter's registration and they prosecuted the voter's, I believe, husband, who had resurrected this voter and fraudulently and re-enabled her registration and cast a mail ballot, a fraudulent mail ballot in her name. He was convicted of voter fraud and he was a Republican.
Yeah. Oh, my. In chapter 19, you addressed the Donald Trump's claim that there was massive mail ballot fraud during the last election. I mean, it seems like you uncovered that it's almost by design how the current mail-in voting process is such a mess. But you support mail-in ballots, right? I mean, it seems like people should be able to vote the easiest way they can legally vote.
Yeah, I support it with some very necessary changes to how it works. In Rhode Island, we used to have to get our signature and our identity confirmed by a notary public before you could send in your mail ballot. So what you're doing in that case is you're providing a driver's license so that the notary public can say that that's you, I confirm it,
right,
and off you go. After COVID, Rhode Island did away with the notary piece of it. When you vote without any interaction with election officials, just winging in a mail ballot isn't the most secure way to do it. And verifying signatures is a lousy way to confirm whether or not you're who you say you are, because my handwriting is just god-awful terrible. And if I write my name for you four times here, you would think I was four different people, right? I mean, I have no...
No, I'm the same way.
I'm a stick figure guy.
I'm like an arthritic seven-year-old having a seizure on the L train. That's my signature.
That's where I'm at. So we need a better mechanism to ensure that whoever's casting that vote is casting that vote. And the other piece of mail ballot processing that I hate. In Rhode Island, we have laws that say for campaigns in front of a polling place on election day, you can't be within 100 feet of the front door. We don't want any partisan actors within any reasonable distance of people coming in to vote. But in Rhode Island, the candidate themselves or any of their workers, employees or whatever can literally peer over the shoulder of somebody filling out a mail ballot in their kitchen. And they do. Mm-hmm. So how do you have this one set of rules for in-person voting and a completely different set of rules for mail ballots, right? I mean, and there are so, you and I could talk all night, and you could listen to me all night.
I could pretend I'm.
About the crazy way we conduct our elections right now. And yeah, the Trump stuff is the sexy stuff. That's what everyone on TV wants to talk to me about. But to me, the most important part of this book is the back half, where I talk about the things that we need to do to improve our elections, to make them more secure, and most importantly for everyone listening out there, to make them more fair. Because the chances are that most of your listeners live in places where the elections are not competitive and that the outcome is already preordained.
Yeah.
That's terrible, and that is awful for our democracy, and we need to change it. We need to do away with things like gerrymandering. We need I'm a third party guy, right? I mean, I started a centrist political party. I think competition is good, and all of our laws are set up when it comes to campaigns campaign finance, the conduct of our elections, getting your name on the ballot, so much of that works against anybody outside the two-party system.
Yeah.
And
Lincoln was third party. Right. He would have no shot today.
It's wrong. And we need to change it because I think we're suffocating under how our elections are working right now. We need to make them work far better than they do.
Well, in part four of your book, you outline these proposals for change. Can I ask you to stick around? We have to hit a break.
Yeah,
can you stay with us for a little bit?
Okay, 100%.
Quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment. More with Ken Block. This is SiriusXM Progress.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Right now, we're back for our conversation with Ken Block, author of Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, The Data That Shows Why He Lost, and How We Can Improve Our Elections. I got to say, Mr. Block, after this book, I think we need a law that dead people can't vote by mail. They've got to show up in person. The corpses need to show up at the ballot box, and then we'll allow it.
By the way, I found one of those in Rhode Island.
One who showed up?
A dead person who showed up. It wasn't what you think, though. Father and son. The father had died tragically. He was an Amtrak worker and got hit by a train.
Oof.
And the son...
Same name.
Yeah. Generational gap in age. It was a poll worker error. They allowed the son to vote the father's registration. The son wasn't even registered to vote. So... You know, it wasn't a...
That's light fraud.
It's not fraud in the sense of, you know, there was any nefarious intent behind it, right?
Right,
It was a series of, are you kidding me type stuff. And
well, so in part four, you outline proposals for change. And given that our election is only 7 months away, what could change now in order to give you more faith in our system and prevent the results from being contested?
Nothing can change between now and the election.
Nothing at all.
The things that I lay out in the book that should be changed, some of them are infrastructure in nature and requires changing systems. Look, I think thinking in the biggest change and the thing that I can think can make the most dramatic difference in our elections, I don't think states should have the responsibility to register voters anymore. It is a disaster. The different states have different rules for registering people. The states don't share data with other states so that we have people registered in multiple states at the same time. Even our illegal using the terminology that conservatives use, are illegal immigrants voting. Well, all of that goes away if we have a national voter registration where we provide you're automatically registered at birth in this country, right?
Yes.
You're registered at birth. The idea of needing to register is silly because the Constitution doesn't say anything about registration.
But it's there to systemically make it harder
for
people.
Do you know why voter registration came about?
Why?
This goes back to the 30s and 40s, and Democrats at the time realized that requiring voter registration would eliminate some people from actually voting.
So, and to this day, voter ID laws, whatever, little ways to make it harder for some people to exercise this right.
Right. So I think we solve a lot of problems by having a federal voter registration.
Amen.
But now you have to change systems all over the country, right? I mean, so this requires vast sums of money.
It requires Republicans going along with it.
Well, I mean, in some ways, see, so much of what I'm talking about, there are things for both sides to like. By doing this, you're really taking the issue, whether it's real or not, of illegals voting off the table.
Sure.
Right?
They can't register.
Right. They're just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that because there's give and take on almost everything that I'm talking about, it's possible to get compromised, because the only way any of these changes get done is for Congress to pass laws. And you and I both know that right now they can't agree on a lunch order.
Well, we also
know
that there's many, many, many figures in our government with a great desire to not make it easier for one person, one vote.
So, you know, what's interesting is that a decent number of Democratic secretaries of state and other high level elections people, when I talk to them about voter ID, they look at me and they say, we know it's really something that we should have.
Oh, they do. Democrats say it.
Yeah, yeah. Because the difficulty in identifying who a person actually is such a problem at this point. The only way to really deal with it is to need some form of identification. If we have universal registration, that doesn't really become such a problem anymore.
You'd think that our Republican brothers and sisters would go along with that then.
They might. They might.
If it becomes easier for everyone, including First Nations people on reservations, to vote?
If it makes it impossible for illegals to vote, that might do the trick.
I mean, I think our Republican friends know that illegal immigrants aren't voting.
I'm not sure what they know.
I'm very curious about your your research. Did you ever have any indication that some in the inner circle knew there was no fraud that could have affected this election, but still went along with it anyway?
I'm pretty confident that Alex Cannon was doing the job that he was paid to do and that he was directed to do. I don't think, based on every accommodation that he made for me as we negotiated the contract, that he really thought that there was going to be substantial verifiable voter fraud.
Yeah.
Some of the lawyers that he worked with, I know, were similarly positioned. What's very interesting is that Cannon and his compadres were very much at war with the John Eastman, Cleta Mitchell, Sidney Powells of the world, which I didn't know while I was doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
But in Cannon's January 6th committee deposition, he's got a juicy paragraph where he describes how he's being constantly attacked by that crew.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
You were on the right side of the people not being indicted in the state of Georgia.
Correct.
What's next for you now? You're on quite a media tour. Tomorrow you're doing Ari Melber?
Yep. And I'm doing some local Rhode Island media from here. I'm in New York City right now. Then I'm off for DC, and I've got C-SPAN, CBS News, the Fox affiliate. I'm doing
the Fox News affiliate or the local Fox affiliate?
The local Fox affiliate.
Okay.
And then I'm doing that night I'm doing Laura Coates on CNN. And
conservative media inviting you?
The closest I've gotten has been Fox affiliate so far. I did give an interview to the Epic Times, and it wasn't a full blown interview on the book, but it was about my opinion piece that had come out in at the beginning of the year. And to their credit, they published everything that the important points that I made, which is that voter fraud is verifiable, quantifiable, and detectable, and nothing that came my way fulfilled those requirements. It just wasn't there, and there was no voter fraud I looked at that would have ever stood up in court, which is what I was paid to do. And they printed that, you know? So that's by far the most conservative media that I've interacted with, and they did put my message out there, but it's been a battle. I haven't been able to get this message put Amazing. Anywhere else on conservative media. It's one of the biggest problems we have, because I think a lot of people who firmly believe there's voter fraud, they're only hearing the voices that say there's been a lot of voter fraud.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
I hope you write an op-ed about your experience promoting this book, because that story alone is fascinating. The book, again, is Disproven, My Unbiased Search for Voter Fraud for the Trump Campaign, the data that shows why he lost, and how we can improve our elections. Ken Block, thank you for your service.
Thanks for having me.
Really a pleasure to have you back. Thank you. Quick break. We'll be right back with your calls. This is SiriusXM Progress, 866-997-GRIT.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm John Fugelsang. This is Progress. We're at 866-997-4748. We're going to be joined very shortly by the great Rhonda Hansom. Let's go to the phones, however. Some of y'all been on hold for quite a while. Bruce in California, thank you so much for your patience. You're on Progress.
How's it going?
Very good, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I wasn't planning on calling tonight until that guy brought up mail-in voting. I don't understand.
Tell me.
These people. I mean, do they think people are breaking into houses and taking people's ballots? Your mail. I've lived in LA County my whole life. I'm a truck driver for the last 30 years.
Thank you.
Absentee ballots. They used to have to request them. Then they gave you the option of permanent, and now they've mailed the ballots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how there could be fraud. It doesn't make.
Bruce.
Explain to me how it.
Can I explain to you? It's not about fraud. It's about making his voters believe there was fraud. That's all it's about.
No, I know there's no. No, but I'm talking about the guy, your guest, made it sound.
Go ahead.
But he's talking about getting notarized. And I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, I mean, the ways to ensure there is no fraud. There's always going to be some fraud. But the point is that there's never been sufficient fraud to sway any national election in this country. The New York Times did this a few years ago, and they examined 26 billion ballots. And they found over the course of it, about 10 instances of provable fraud. A lot of times it's accidents, and a lot of times it's like what he said. Someone dies before it gets mailed in, or someone mails in a ballot of someone who has died. Or they vote twice if they're lucky enough to live in two states.
Right. I don't know, but the point I guess I'm trying to make is, like you just made.
Yeah.
But it just triggered me.
I understand. But his whole thing was he was paid by the Trump campaign to find it, because he's the expert. And, you know, we got him on a few months ago, and I was really, really impressed, because they searched everything and they said, sorry, Trump, we got nothing. And he wound up testifying to January 6th for it.
No, all that I understand. I mean, I get it. Was just when he brought up he thought there was a problem with me. He said I think the system works just fine. I mean, just look at the states of Colorado, what, Utah, Washington, Oregon, Hawaii.
Overall, it works fine, but they still, like, I mean, I'll disagree with them on the voter ID laws, because those things are designed to make it harder for people to vote. And if you have to pay 10 cents to ride a bus to go get a new ID, that's a poll tax and it's illegal. So I'm vigorously against it, because we've seen that it affects minorities and people of low income. And that's who it hurts, because they don't want poor people voting. And keeping poor people of all races from voting has been what the status quo was focused on my entire life and long before I was born.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard Tom Hartman a couple of years ago talk about, I think in Mexico, and, you know, he was talking about this, you are issued a federal voter ID card. That's what we should do.
That's
here.
What we should do.
But the Republicans would never go for
They'd
that.
They'd hate so. It because they get more mileage out of saying that it's stolen. And I mean, Donald Trump to this day says that he won the popular vote, not Hillary Clinton, in 2016, because he wants people to believe that 3 million undocumented immigrants voted somehow, were able to register and then cast ballots. And the media has let him get away with this lie for over 8 years now.
Exactly. That was the other point that sort of triggered me when he was talking about, well, he was calling them illegals. They're undocumented aliens.
Exactly right. I know.
They don't vote. First of all, they're not going to take, I mean, a couple maybe, but I don't even know that. You think they're going to risk the penalty of that getting caught? I don't think so.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, look, it would happen and it would be great and would guarantee no vote fraud. I don't think the Republicans would go for it because they don't want to have more turnout. Everything they do, from voter ID to trying to make it harder to vote by mail, taking out the drop boxes, when there's large turnout, Republicans lose. When there is low turnout, Republicans win. This is true every election of my lifetime. And so they'll never get behind any policy that would make it equitable and safe and ensure there wouldn't be any illegal voting, because they don't want it to be easier. And you know, at some point in our lifetime, they're going to make it so you can vote on your phone. They're going to try to find a way to do it that you can legally vote on your phone and it's encrypted and blah, blah, blah. And Republicans will fight it every step of the way because they want it to be as difficult as possible for you know who to cast a vote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you, Bruce.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate you. 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. Let me get one more call before Miss Rhonda comes to play. Brian in Oregon. How you doing? Welcome.
Good, John. How are you doing?
Very good, sir. What's going on tonight?
Well, before I completely get distracted, I now figured out you're going to be at Portland on the West Coast.
Yes. Not Portland, Maine. Portland, Oregon. Indeed, we are.
Finally, you said which Portland you were going to.
Sorry.
It's December 7th. So
yes.
Last night, my gal said, "Oh, I think we can go."
Ah, I hope you'll come. Please.
So we'll probably be there. But she also said, can you at least see if he'll give you a handicap discount like they do in France?
Brian.
I was a cheap date in Paris, I'll tell you. I should have hired out.
Do me a favor. Why don't you, if you have our email address or something, write to me in some way and we'll work something out, all right?
No, I'm joking.
I'm not. I'll make it sweet for you, bro. You call our show all the time. I'll make it sweet for you. I'll get you to the meet and greet or whatever. But if you already bought the tickets, we've got your money. So fuck off then. Yeah.
No, we haven't bought anything.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah, right.
On the Friday or whenever show did the dates again.
All right, as we get closer, get your email to Chris or Thea when you call in, and we'll straighten you out.
Oh, okay. Well, the whole voting thing is, I mean, anyways, I'm kind of with Bruce. In Oregon is pretty close to, but not exactly, registered to vote at birth, but when you get a driver's license, 16,
okay,
that you get registered.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, but...
That's cool. I like that. I have no problem with 16-year-olds voting. I think we should get involved in civics as young as we can.
Well, I don't think they vote... I don't think they vote at 16.
Okay.
But they're registered automatically, and then they got to opt out if they don't want to be registered.
Okay. Got it.
And another topic, it was the State of the Union.
Yes, sir.
And I love Biden's, like Sean in California did, where he said, "I know you guys can read."
Yeah.
And then I don't know if I heard anybody else say, but he, with his gun legislation, said, you know, he taught the Second Amendment for 12 years, and none of this stuff goes against the Second
Amendment. It doesn't.
It doesn't. I mean, if you don't think gang members should be allowed to own tactical nukes or white phosphorus or grenade launchers, then you support some limitations on our Second Amendment rights, don't you? I mean, it's.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, actually, before you get to the Second Amendment, you have the preamble. And the preamble, you know, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and promote the general welfare. Those things, to me, indicate we don't need insane, emotionally unhinged 20-year-olds with AR-15s near schools.
Oh, exactly. Well, and I'm actually in the market for one of those M1 tanks.
Well, you better get it before the liberals take your tanks away.
And I think
Biden's going to come take your tank away.
Yeah. Oh, God. Anyways, you know. My other thought on Friday was, I think there should be sweat lodges in, like, high schools if there are Native students, if there are prayer groups in those schools.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a religious freedom issue, and I think there should be Quran studies.
Do you think the school should be required to fund and build a sweat lodge on the premises? Because then you're going to have a lot of demands from every, I mean, listen, I love the idea, and I love looking out for Native American kids, but you think if you do that, then you're going to have requests for every kind of holy group to have their facilities on a public school, and I don't think you can do that.
Sweat lodge, I think, is a pretty easy thing to build.
But if it's done in the context of religion, you can't do it in public schools.
But I know, but my point is, they have Bible studies in these, a lot of these, like Oklahoma, and I'm sure they do, or they try to anyways.
Right.
It's a kind of a
I understand, and I'm not against kids having after school Bible study on their own time in the premises. I get all that, but the kids aren't making the taxpayers build a chapel. Like, I love this idea, but I don't think you'll be able to get school funding to build sweat lodges. Local taxpayers will not be that open-minded.
Otherwise, I think also there should be Quran studies and whatever holy book the Hindus have.
There should be abortion clinics in schools as well. Let's go all the way. Let's offend as many people possible with this theory.
Well, let's offend a lot of people with only having Bible studies.
Brian, I thank you for the call. I got to run. Rhonda is waiting in the midst. Now, you guys know Rhonda Hansom. She is one of the coolest and funniest comedians in the New York comedy scene. She's open for Aretha Franklin. She's open for, my God, she's open for everybody, this woman. It's kind of rude. She is the Nina Simone of comedy. We are blessed to have her with us every Monday night. It is time now for Tall, Dark, and Handsome Mondays with Miss Rhonda Hansom.
I'm black, y'all.
Thank God. Welcome back, queen. How you doing?
I'm great, John. I am really fantastic. I have the exhaustion from being fully involved in my craft. As you know, I'm in Tech Week now.
That's right.
Dust of Egypt, the play about Sojourner Truth, the abolitionist, the religious, I don't want to say fanatic, but the religiously inspired abolitionist Sojourner Truth. Her search for her son, who was sold into slavery and taken down south. And we're doing it at the Sheen Center, and I've got fantastic actors. Oh, my gosh.
And I'm going to try and come this weekend. I'm going to try and make it down there. I'm trying.
Please do.
It's my one weekend in New York. I'm trying to make it happen.
Do that. Because first thing, the Sheen Center is a fabulous space on the Lower East Side on Bleecker Street. And the play, it has humor, it has pathos, it has God speaking to people, and I'm loving it, and I just can't wait for us to go up. We play the 14th through the 17th, a 2 o'clock matinee on Sunday, and Thursday through Saturday, 7 o'clock at the Sheen Center.
So cool, Rhonda. How do people get tickets if they want, if they're going to be in the New York area, to come and see your work?
They should go to the sheencenter.org. They can get information there. They can look on my social media. I think I post every half hour that I'm directing this play. And they should get tickets and come on down. I'm just so thrilled about it. The Sheen Center has been very supportive, and my team, my entire team, including my writer, my producer, and the actors, are just wonderful collaborative associates.
That's great. I'm deeply, seethingly envious of you that you get to work on a play like this right now. I really am.
It's fun.
I hate you completely.
But you have the army of the night.
Ah, well, we do. And we're taking your calls on everything at 866-997-4748. 866-997-GRIT. There's a lot to cover. I began the show just saying, I just went through a bunch of things Donald Trump said just this weekend, and that took 20 minutes to go through all of his malfeasance and fuckery. Rhonda, you didn't watch the Oscars. I'm guessing you're too busy with rehearsals.
I'm very busy, but just like with the State of the Union, I have seen clips.
You know what? They were both pretty good broadcasts, pretty entertaining. State of the Union really exceeded my expectations.
Well, I want to say that Jimmy Kimmel did not have a really, really rough time. He didn't have a rough time. I was happy for him because, you know, with the both of us being stand-ups, we know how treacherous that position of hosting can be. And he did all right. I got a little bit weirded out by the rectangle penis mentioned for Robert Downey.
Yeah, my son's first time watching the first half hour of the Oscars, and he was a bit perplexed by that statement too.
I was perplexed.
Did you get to see the dead people segment? They found a way to make it worse than every other Oscars in history.
No, I did not. How did they manage to do that?
Well, it's already weird, the in memoriam. You know this, because what happens is they list everyone who worked in cinema who died in the last year, although they usually forget, like everyone we know. Anyone we ever worked with is forgotten. There was a lot of that last night. But it's always weird because when people recognize a name, they clap. Which makes it seem like the audience is like, oh, I'm glad that one's dead. Bravo to that expiration. But last night they did it with a little quartet playing and then a couple of dancers doing something elegant. But instead of shooting the screen showing the people's faces and names who had died, they did a wide shot for almost the entire number. And Andrea Bocelli is there with someone else singing that Andrea Bocelli song that he always sings. And with lyrics made into English that were really daffy, and there were no close-ups, so you had to squint to see who is that on the screen behind the musicians and dancers and Andrea Bocelli on the screen within my screen who died. And it was really hard to discern anything, and to say nothing of how many tons of people they left out. They did have Richard Lewis, which I appreciated, and Robbie Robertson and some friends of this show who died over the last year. But it was a mess. And the awards were, except for, Lily Gladstone losing, the awards were mostly quite predictable.
Well, on the in memoriam, at least I hope nobody does what I do when I hear a death notice and no one stood up and said, I'm still here.
No, just a lot of people complaining they couldn't tell who had died because you couldn't see it on the screen. I recommend everyone go on YouTube and just see how bad it was. But in a way, it kind of showed how good the rest of the broadcast was. This one website was so clunky.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we try to do our best to honor our dead, but, you know, it's show business. It's show business.
Well, listen, I'm glad you're here because we had a situation over the last week where Joe Biden gave this really impressive State of the Union speech. Like, you know, I think a lot of people went into it dreading it, and he knocked it out of the park and really articulated what his vision is, dispelled a lot of the concerns about his age, did great crowd work, handled the hecklers, made the hecklers look like idiots. But at one point, he was responding to some heckling of Marjorie Taylor Greene about the illegals. And he talked about how Laken Riley was killed by an illegal. And he got some pushback for using that particular slur. I want to play clip A2. This is White House spokesperson Olivia Dalton. She was quick to correct reporters about Biden's unfortunate use of illegals when ad-libbing to Marjorie Greene's attacks at the State of the Union. Here's a little bit of this.
President Biden apologized for calling Laken Riley's killer an illegal. Does he feel like he needs to apologize to illegal immigrants for calling them what they are, or using the term illegal?
First of all, I want to be really clear about something. The president absolutely did not apologize. There was no apology anywhere in that conversation. He did not apologize. He used a different word. I think what we should be really clear about is the facts. So in addition to the fact that, the president did not apologize, I want to make another thing clear. The president spoke directly to this in the State of the Union address not four nights ago when he spoke passionately about knowing what it means to lose a child and extended his deep grief and condolences to Lake and Riley's family in front of the entire country.
Okay, so you get the general idea. And it's true, Biden never actually did apologize. He corrected himself in the interview and said, I should have said undocumented.
But why, John?
Well, that's my question, because why not apologize? It's a slur, and it's an acceptable slur.
When did it become a slur? When a black person does something that's illegal, it's pointed out.
Right, but here's the thing. Let me point out why it's a slur. Have you ever heard Fox News call any white lawbreaker that word? It's a dehumanizing, otherizing term to make someone like vermin, to make someone seem less than human. Now, again, if you drive 56 in a 55 zone, you're an illegal. But we only use that term for brown people who cross the border. The majority of undocumented immigrants are people who overstayed their visas. We never call those, but there's 50,000 Irish that aren't supposed to be here. We never call them illegals. It's only used for non-white people.
John, what I have come to understand is that a majority of our earliest laws were created to keep black people under control.
Absolutely.
Black people from moving freely, even reading and writing.
Absolutely.
John. And I don't.
And they're still trying to keep y'all from voting. They're still trying to keep y'all from voting.
Be that as it may, I don't feel like I'm going to play this word game where illegal is made a slur. It is a description. It is an adjective.
Illegal immigrant is it? But again, the noun illegals or illegal as a person. I've never heard it used on a white person ever.
Well, without papers, you know. The acronym for Without Papers became known as a slur. But the fact of the matter was those people were undocumented.
Yeah, they were WOPs, and WOP eventually became an offensive slur, and Italians didn't like it. We stopped saying it because we didn't want to be dicks.
Well, but you hung them anyway in Louisiana.
Well, I wasn't around for that. But yeah, I'm just in favor of. Listen, I mean, I know it's woke. I know it's woke PC virtue signaling bullshit. But to me, it's like if there's
I didn't mean you personally.
No, I know. But like, I know how woke and silly it sounds. But again, you know, Hitler had to make Germans believe that Jews were less than human. And dehumanizing language, especially for marginalized minorities of brown people, I'm always wary whenever it's acceptable in society. And I'll say it again. They've never they didn't call Jeffrey Dahmer an illegal. Only brown people get that term. Not people, not undocumented people, not Christian refugees, which is what they really are. Illegals.
Well, I'm going to let this go because I feel very strongly about it. You know, like when people say ghetto, I have a very particular vision of people in shtetls, of Jewish people.
Sure.
I don't automatically go to something that diminishes and demeans my people. I know that term came around for people who were in Europe.
But when you hear like Paris Hilton say, oh, my God, that's so ghetto. Like,
yeah,
you know what she's saying. You know what she's saying.
What comes to my mind is not a black person.
Oh.
What comes to my mind is the origin of it.
You think Paris is referring to Warsaw and the Jews?
No, she's not. But I refuse to let my mind be bent by that.
I respect that. I love these debates we have, Rhonda. You keep me on my toes all the time. I'm checking in my liberal card. There is so much to talk about, so much I want to talk with you about and our listeners. And we do welcome your talk about the Oscars. Did you see any of the films, Rhonda, this year that won or that should have won?
I don't think so. I heard that Oppenheimer was kind of long. It involved explosives of some sort.
Yes, it involved explosives. But again, when the Japanese are slaughtered, it's tastefully kept off camera. There's no Japanese people in the movie, so you can feel really good about it.
People were complaining about Leonard Bernstein's nose. I mean,
yeah, that's fine. I think, you know, it's makeup. He looked just like him. It's amazing. There's a lot of good movies this year. Yeah, I'm excited for you because you get to catch up on all of them.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Let's say hello to some folks who are in the audience. We're at 866-997-4748. Let me go to Matt and Cali. Matt, thanks for your patience. You're on Progress.
John, how are you?
Very good. How are you?
So nice.
Hi there.
To speak with you, my lady. So I talked to you and the God Squad a couple weeks ago about my my Putin Trump loving lady friends.
Okay.
And
how's it working out? How's it working out for you?
You know, it's kind of not working out because I'm pretty sure she's seen the writing on the wall. So,
yeah, I understand.
We'll see. You know, I'm
No, I get it. I mean, you want to have kids and she's a Nazi. How do you make it work? I understand.
No, I ruined my first marriage with kids, John, just like you. Come on, man.
I ruined my first life with kids, but I'm codependent, so I like them, you know. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm a little league coach now. Come on.
So how's it going? So what's going on with this?
We're just friends at this point.
Okay.
Is that friends with benefits or what?
It sounds like the benefits have dried up.
No. There's never been benefits.
Oh, Matt, I hate to say this, but you're better off. I'm sorry. If someone's fighting to keep women from having rights, if someone's fighting to defend Donald Trump's racism,
fighting a woman,
you can't.
Yeah,
so. You can't. You just can't. Let her find pleasure another way that doesn't involve you.
Two quick points. The boys love the Public Enemy song that we had last year for the intro.
Isn't it great? That's Harder Than You Think from 2012.
Oh, I love that.
Great. It's
and one of the best
Public Enemy songs.
Can we use the phone? Yeah, here you go, guys.
Nice.
Do Bluetooth. There you go.
Okay.
And your Dr. Phil interview was top notch.
Thank you.
Over the top.
A lot of people got mad at me for
it.
I got a lot of shit for that because I didn't fight him.
Why?
Because I didn't fight him. Because I politely disagreed with him on things and I didn't actually make a scene. And people said I capitulated.
He made sense.
No, he didn't. He was full of shit.
He was full of shit. Well, but
I'm sorry. He's talking about the threats to children. It's all about the children, and the children are in danger from having to wear masks during a plague. I'm like, okay, that was a danger. Oh, and then he goes into the transgender care is killing the children, and I'm like, you know, I went through your book. Guns are killing children. Guns are the leading cause of death of children more than disease and car accidents. You don't mention that in this book. And he wasn't interested in
that. Brother.
He's writing for MAGA. He's marketing the MAGA. He's fleecing those guys.
I wear a mask every day to work. I take care of cancer patients. So
wow.
I believe into, you know.
I wear a mask a lot of the time because it's more pleasant for Thea if she doesn't have to see my face. So I do wear a mask here.
I hear you, brother. You know?
Yeah.
I
mean,
but John, when you were with Dr. Phil, did you get a nice gift?
He did. He gave me this little coin. He gave me a Dr. Phil coin. You know when you do military shows and sometimes the commanding officer will give
that.
These little poker chips and they're like
challenge,
little from the Air Force. But now I've got one from Dr. Phil and a bunch of Marine bases. Go ahead, Matt.
No, I was just going to say it's called a challenge coin. I was United States Army for...
Thank you for your service. What's it called?
All right. It's called a challenge coin.
So if you go into
like a bar
and
they pull out, if you have a coin in your pocket, you pull it out. And if someone doesn't have it, they're buying the round.
Oh, I love it. All right. I'm going to go to one of those Dr. Phil bars in the dirty part of town and see how I get lucky. I got to run, Matt. Thank you so much. Good luck with the lady. 866-997-4748. Can I play you a little bit of Nancy Mace, Congresswoman from South Carolina? I assume Chris voted for her. She had a fun weekend in the media. Here, I want to just play. She had a very tense and confusing exchange with George Stephanopoulos. This is A5 over her endorsement of Donald Trump. She is endorsing a rapist. And Stephanopoulos brings this up that he's committed sexual assault. And Nancy Mace has said that she's a sexual assault survivor. So his whole thing is, please walk me through this. Here's a little bit of their very awkward exchange.
So you've made it very clear you're comfortable with Donald Trump being found liable for rape and you're comfortable with his actions on January 6th.
I didn't say I was comfortable with it. You're putting words into my mouth.
You wouldn't condemn it.
And you're putting words into my mouth.
Well, are you comfortable with it?
I support Donald Trump for president.
So you're
comfortable with it. I just endorsed him a few weeks ago.
Even though he's been found liable for rape.
In a civil judgment, not a criminal court case. But you go ahead and keep shaming women who've been raped. Good luck with that.
Thank you for joining us. We'll be right back.
I didn't quite hear the shaming part, Rhonda, but this got all the headlines over the weekend.
You didn't either.
No.
I just did a spit take on that part, John. But see, this is why I feel like She just came out of the blue with that.
Oh, yeah. But because when you're defending a rapist, you've got to make yourself the victim. So he's like, why are you helping this man? And she has to turn it into you're attacking all rape victims. And she's continued to do that. That's the hill she's choosing to die on, defending Donald Trump. And I think she should keep on defending him for sexual abuse late into her life very loudly. To me, all these MAGAs need to say very loudly, it wasn't rape. It was only sexual abuse, and defend it.
So, I really resent that. I don't like that she just went straight to that point of that Stephanopoulos was shaming rape victims. It's ridiculous. It's yeah. Straight out propaganda.
What's she going to do? Give a direct answer? Miss Rhonda Handsome, how do the riffraff out there in our audience follow you and keep up with all your many comedic and theatrical doings?
Oh, please, on Facebook, Rhonda Handsome Comedy. On Instagram, Rhonda Full, that is with two L's. And on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rhonda Handsome, like a handsome man without the D.
Because you don't need the D, I keep telling you this.